Today on the 21st show, the Illinois Governor's Office recently warned of a multi-billion dollar deficit for next year. And that was before President Trump returned to office and began trying to put a brick on federal money going to states for things like healthcare and education. With that in mind, Governor Pritzker is scheduled to give his annual State of the State and Budget Address today in the Illinois State Capitol Building, where we are broadcasting live. We're going to spend our entire hour on that, starting with another top Democrat in state government, House Speaker Chris Welch. We'll then hear from his Republican counterpart, House Minority Leader Tony McCombie, and we'll take a deep dive into Illinois' fiscal health with a pair of policy experts. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are broadcasting live this morning from the Illinois State House because our entire program today is devoted to this year's State of the State and Budget Address, which Governor J.B. Pritzker is set to deliver at noon, 1 hour from now. We'll be bringing you live coverage and analysis of that over the next couple of hours. Illinois leadership is up against a lot this year, from what was recently a projected $3 billion budget gap to tremendous uncertainty about funding from Washington. We asked you what you were hoping to hear from the governor today. Lloyd and Danville in our texting group told us, first, he's fiscally done well. Secondly, our state representatives need to work harder at working together or be voted out. Job training is key to Illinois' success. Education in our schools needs priority, and policing needs to be addressed. We also heard from Ann in Urbana, who said, I think Illinois should continue to spend its money on improving infrastructure, women's health, supporting our farmers and our immigrants. Keep working to help the people of Illinois without regard for status, political affiliation, nationality. Keep your integrity, she said. We'll share more of your thoughts throughout the show. For now, my first guest will be presiding over the joint session of the General Assembly, where Governor Pritzker is delivering his speech. The Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives is Emmanuel Chris Welch. He's a Democrat from Hillside. He joins me now here in the South Hall of the Capitol. Speaker Welch, welcome back to the 21st show.
Brian, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
So let's start with the state. All right, we are back live here at the Illinois State House. Apologize for the technical difficulties we've had with our connection there. We are speaking with Illinois House Speaker Chris Welch about the budget address, which is coming up in about an hour from now. Speaker Welch, we're going to start with the state finances today. A few months ago, Governor Pritzker's budget office projected Illinois would face a greater than $3 billion deficit in the next fiscal year. On the eve of his speech, apparently he's saying things are looking up, or at least not quite as bad. What is the story with Illinois' budget deficit?
Well, I think what we have to do, Brian, is recognize that a couple of months ago, that was just a projection. GOMB, the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, their job is to be conservative and to give us the worst news they can possibly give us. And they've done that before. Even though they've done that before, what we've done the last 6 years consistently is pass balanced budgets. We're going to do that again because what we knew is they were extremely conservative and revenues are actually better than what it was predicted in November. We're not all the way there. There's going to be some things to close the gap. But I think people are going to be encouraged by the governor's budget address.
Can you say what is the projected deficit for the next budget year?
Well, the governor's going to present a balanced budget. The governor's going to present a balanced budget that actually has a small surplus. We're going to have a deposit into the rainy day fund, and we're going to have a surplus. That's what we've done the last 6 years, and we're going to do it for a seventh year.
What changed in the situation from a few months ago to where we are now?
Well, got to remember, it was just a projection, and they use outside sources like Standard & Poor's to help in putting those projections together. Standard & Poor's' economic forecast has changed with a brighter outlook, and the revenue projections are significantly higher than they were back in November.
So, okay, even if a shortfall is not suddenly a problem for the coming year, things could still be rough in 2028, 29, 30, with deficits in the neighborhood of $5 billion. What is on the table to deal with the ongoing sort of fiscal situation in Illinois?
Well, the governor is going to come present his seventh balanced budget in a row. I think a person's past performance should be indicative of what they're going to do in the future. We continue to present balanced budgets that lead to credit upgrades for the state. 9 credit upgrades so far. After a seventh balanced budget in a row, we'll get more credit upgrades. Those are things that help with financial projections. Those are also things that help keep costs down. And if you have to borrow money or bond money for infrastructure projects, it's cheaper to do it. And so what we're doing here today with the start of this year's budget cycle is very important. That sets up the next one.
So one of the big pieces of uncertainty hanging over Illinois' budget, as it is in all 50 states, is what's happening with the Trump administration in Washington. So what can you tell us about what has been affected in Illinois so far with regard to the Trump administration's move? I know there was a temporary problem accessing a Medicaid payment system. We just talked yesterday on the show, we talked to a University of Illinois professor who had to lay off 30 people in his unit because they were doing work on behalf of USAID. So what can you tell us about how you're incorporating that into your budget thinking this year?
Well, I think we have to be extremely concerned about what's coming out of Washington. The executive orders that the president has been signing since day one seem to be very reckless and doesn't take into account what's been going on at the state levels in all 50 states, whether they're red or blue. These executive orders are impacting universities because of his DEI order. They're impacting schools. Daycare centers because of federal stoppage of the funding freeze. They're impacting things across the board. This issue with tariffs is driving prices up. And we have to be concerned about his threats around Medicaid. Illinois is a state that heavily relies on Medicaid. And I believe there's poor people in red states as well that rely on Medicaid. And states need to be very concerned and mindful about what the president is doing in this space.
And as you said, Medicaid is something that affects people across the political spectrum, or not affects people, but it's a program used by people across the political spectrum. I think 1 in 4 Illinoisans gets health care through the Medicaid program. One of the particular targets that Republicans in Washington have talked about rolling back funding for is the childless adult population that was part of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare expansion. I understand Illinois has a sort of trigger law that would change coverage for that if there are federal changes to the program. Can you talk about where we are on that policy, whether there's any consideration of backstopping it if the feds do cut back on what they're willing to pay for their share of that?
I think the reality, Brian, is if the president goes through with his cuts to Medicaid, Illinois and states all across this country, not just blue states like Illinois, but red states, and let's also say red districts within Illinois, will be severely impacted because there's no way to backfill those numbers. The governor's going to present a balanced budget. It's going to have a small surplus. But that's not a surplus that can come anywhere near filling a backfill if the president goes through with deep Medicaid cuts.
Another area where the state gets, or at least governments in Illinois get a lot of money from the federal government is through education. And we've seen President Trump's in his targeting of, what he calls DEI. I wonder how Illinois should respond if, say the Department of Education makes money contingent on eliminating certain aspects of the curriculum that Illinois lawmakers have deemed important, black history, LGBT history, sex ed, or something like that.
again, these are things that we can't be silent about. We have to continue to speak up and be very vocal about. They're very detrimental, not just to education in Illinois, but all across the country. What the president is doing with the whole issue with the Department of Education, it won't just wipe out Black history. It will wipe out education for people with disabilities, because schools receive significant dollars from the federal government for special education. And I just hope people are paying attention and that they speak up. They call their representatives in Congress. They call our senators and make sure that their voices are being heard. And I can't stress that enough.
If you're just joining us, we're speaking live from the Illinois State House with the Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives, Chris Welch. We're talking in advance of the governor's budget address, which is set to happen about 45 minutes from now, two floors above where we are sitting. Mr. Speaker, there's been tension in recent years between pressure to be more austere with state government money, especially as the significant amount of federal COVID money has been wound down. And yet there's also that desire of representatives and senators to spend money on new programs to benefit their constituents. How do you and your caucus evaluate those competing demands?
Well, what we do is we go line by line through the budget. You know, we try to look for efficiencies every single year. And I think we've done a pretty good job of that, as evidenced by the balanced budgets and the credit upgrades. You know, if you look at what we did with the federal dollars, we didn't create new programs in the budget. We used it to pay off one-time debts. And so now that federal dollars are gone, you're going to see the governor propose a budget that doesn't backfill where those federal dollars no longer exist. We didn't create a problem for ourselves. You're going to see spending that matches our revenues based on the priorities that we have as Illinoisans. It's a responsible and compassionate budget. And that's what we as a caucus are guided by, being responsible and compassionate.
It's interesting because, and maybe we can just get a little wonky about how the budget actually comes together. There are these people known as budgeteers. I understand your caucus is taking a little different approach than has been done in the past. Typically, each, you know, the Democrats in the House, the Republicans in the House, and their counterparts in the Senate will each have one lawmaker who's sort of the point person. You're dividing that job up this year. Can you talk about why that is and sort of the different, I don't know if you want to call them factions or perspectives in your caucus that maybe made you think that was a good idea?
Well, we're a large caucus. We're very diverse. And I think it's important that we embrace all the voices. And so having multiple budgeteers in the House is consistent with our size. We're the largest caucus of all the four caucuses. And we want to make sure that the information they're receiving is trusted information. Because when you're asking people to vote on a budget document, that's one of the biggest things they do all year. And they need to trust the information that's coming to them. And I just think that approach helps us build more trust in the budget making process.
And maybe avoid sort of conflicts between moderates and progressives heading into those negotiations. We have just a few minutes left in our time together. I do want to ask you what you thought of your direct predecessor's conviction in Chicago last week on federal corruption charges. Of course, I'm speaking about former House Speaker Michael Madigan.
Well, I got to say that I always thought that a court of law was a place for that to be sorted out. And I think the jury did its job. I think when you look at that, for the number of weeks that the trial took place, the jury took it appropriate amount of time to go through the evidence. I got to tell you, my appreciation and respect for our legal system is at an all-time high as a result of that. I think you have to appreciate what those jurors went through and what they did and respect their verdict.
One of the things that on which he was convicted was appointing people to boards or sort of recommending people for boards in what the jury and the federal government said was for personal gain. Do you recommend people to boards and commissions? How do you approach that differently from what he did? Because I'm sure he would say he thought he was operating. I know he said it in court that he thought he was operating legally. What do you do differently that he didn't?
Well, I think I do a lot of things differently. Just my entire approach to the speakership is very different. It has to be. And that's one of the areas. You don't see me recommending a lot to boards. Now, I had a former seatmate of mine who left the General Assembly and went to the Labor Relations Board. My advice was sought on that, and I spoke very highly of my former seatmate. You know, and is that a recommendation? You can probably say that was a recommendation, but, you know, it's just not something I do every day. It's something that I've been very intentional about and very mindful of.
I also want to, we have just about a minute left. In a few minutes on the show, I'm going to be speaking with House Republican Leader Toni McCombie. I suspect she will say some version of what she has said many times and other Republicans have said in the past, which is the budget process needs to be more transparent and they would like more involvement in that process. I know you don't need their votes. The Democrats have supermajorities in the House and the Senate, but we have seen a lot of alienation in American politics. So briefly, I wonder, you know, what is standing in the way of a more inclusive bipartisan budget process in Illinois?
Well, since I've been speaker, I've been very intentional about slowing the budget process down. Republicans have had input in the budget. They may not like what they have given us, but they've given us input, and they're going to continue to give us input. We're continuing to try to find ways to make things better. My new budgeteers, two of my new budgeteers just took out Leader McCombie and her budgeteer to dinner recently. The conversations are going to happen more often. We want to be inclusive, but they have to be a part of that process. They can't just be the party of no. One of my issues with them is they've been the party of no. They make demands, but they want to vote no. And I'm going to still say, you know, they have to be a part of the entire process, and that includes putting some votes on a board for a budget.
Speaker Walz, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Emmanuel Chris Welch is the Speaker of the Illinois House of Representatives. We are about 38 minutes away from Governor Pritzker delivering his annual State of the State and budget address. We're going to take a break here on the 21st Show and continue with the House Republican Leader, Toni McCombie. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, broadcasting today from the Illinois Capitol Building in Springfield. We are about 36 minutes away from Governor J.B. Pritzker delivering his combined State of the State and budget address. I want to share a few more thoughts from listeners we heard when we asked about what you want to hear from the governor in this statement. Christopher in Brimfield said, property taxes seem out of step with property values. That's my biggest concern. But I also think the state's doing a good job with its budget. It can always do better. We also heard from John in Harvard, Illinois, who said, we've known the answer to saving billions of dollars in Illinois for 50 years. We have to get rid of all these taxing bodies and consolidate state and local and city government operations that fall under state taxing authority. Governor Pritzker, according to some of the fact sheets he shared with the press this morning, will propose making it easier to at least consolidate some township governments in Illinois. John, look out for that. Meantime, we're joined now by the Republican leader of the Illinois House of Representatives, Toni McCombie. She's from Savannah, Illinois, a small Mississippi River town in the northwest part of the state. She joins me now in person here in the south hallway of the Capitol building. Leader McCombie, welcome back to the 21st Show, and let's dive right in with state finances. Governor Pritzker's budget office was projecting a greater than $3 billion deficit for next year. Now, reportedly, it's a rosier picture today when he's going to be delivering his budget address. But what do you understand to be the sort of broad fiscal circumstances heading into budget season this year?
Well, it's always interesting when it comes to budget time that all of a sudden there's these funds that are found. So $3.2 billion, everybody has been talking about it, regardless of the side of the aisle. Even right after that, Deputy Governor comes out with a letter to the agencies of, you know, we've got his own little doge, really. We've got to come up with some, you know, efficiencies and some cuts. And here we are now, all of a sudden, you know, we have found some money. So you can't come up with money and cut costs on paper and say it's a balanced budget.
What sort of cuts or revenue increases? I suspect not. But what would House Republicans be prepared to support in order to meet these challenges?
Well, you know, there's always some things that come through the budget that we have shared priorities, right? Whether it's funding for our most vulnerable, education, public safety, those are shared priorities and things that we can always get behind. We are not going to be supportive of any sort of tax increases. You know, when I first started in 2017, it was a $36 billion budget, and last year we were at $53.1 billion. It took the Democrats three times, and actually they had to break their own rules to pass a budget because there was $1 billion in tax increases. We can't continue to do that.
I mean, some of that is inflation, right? I mean, we certainly heard a lot about that in the past few years.
Well, I don't think there was that last year. I think you're going to probably see some inflationary costs this year. But, you know, there's some good programs. I mean, look at Smart Start Illinois. That's a program that the governor has been very passionate about, one that Republicans also, especially in rural Illinois, is very passionate about daycare and you know, child care. And here, I hope it's sustainable, and I hope the funding is going to be still in the budget. That's very important to everybody. And that's the problem. If you have a good program and you're outspending the program, it's not going to be sustainable. And that's a real concern.
What are you hoping to hear from Governor Pritzker today?
I would love to hear about a flat budget. I would love to, you know, is there cuts that we can see that has made it flat, if nothing else? I don't anticipate a reduction, but I would hope for a flat budget.
One of the big sort of hard to predict pressures on the Illinois budget in the coming year is going to be what's happening in Washington. We've seen the Trump administration, you know, with Medicaid funding, education funding potentially. Even yesterday on the show, we talked to a University of Illinois person who had to lay off 30 people because his unit was doing research and agriculture work with African countries because of the USAID shutdown. I wonder what you think of the Trump administration's approach to trying to reduce federal government spending.
Well, I think certainly things that happen in Washington affect states, but I think everybody needs to relax. I mean, to make quick reactions because of something that has happened. We've seen it already, you know, with the gaslighting that was done here under our own dome. 5 minutes later, all of the cuts that they said was happening wasn't happening. So I think everybody just needs to relax, let the policies play out, see what's happening. I think tariffs, they could be good and they could be bad. And I think there's pros and cons that we need to, you know, think about. Stopping fentanyl coming across our borders, I think that is a good thing. And if that a tariff is going to stop that, I think we should all be able to get on board with that.
What about that USAID program I mentioned? It's the Soybean Innovation Lab. And they make a case that part of their work creates markets for Illinois farmers to sell their products overseas for aid purposes. And they also, you know, monitor disease, things that could affect soybean. I mean, is that the sort of thing that, yes, it's international development, but it does have that Illinois connection as one example?
Well, I think, you know, Illinois, the number one economic driver is agriculture, right? So I think to pinpoint one program over another on a federal spending, you know, that's not what I do here. I concentrate on Illinois, right? So I can't pinpoint one program over another, what's a good spender or not. That's what we elect our congressmen and women to do. So I'll let them do that piece and nitpick that. You know, I'll nitpick our Illinois budget. But anything that is going to support our Illinois ag, you know, I'm in.
So let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with the House Republican leader, Tony McCombie, ahead of Governor Pritzker's State of the State and Budget Address, which is set to begin about 30 minutes from now. So, Leader McCombie, the state's Medicaid system, health care for the poor and disabled, it gets a lot of federal money. And there was a time when, as we mentioned a few moments ago, Illinois could not access that reimbursement system. Apparently, that was a temporary issue, but there are some moves to scale back how much money states get, especially as it relates to low-income adults who don't have children. Would you support scaling back that, this is the Affordable Care Act expansion. Would you support scaling that back in Illinois if the federal government scales back its commitment to that program?
What I would support, and I believe our caucus would support, is the Medicaid funding for illegal immigrants. So we spend about $440 million in Illinois for that. We would certainly support that cut. We would also support the millions of dollars for taxpayer-funded abortions. Our caucus would support that as well. These are cuts that certainly are areas that should be cut. When it comes to the Medicaid budget in Illinois, that is a huge piece of our budget. But we would also support actually looking at and funding our seven-year Puns list. If we're going to really have this be a, the budget be a moral document, let's look at the folks that are on that, that list for 7 years that are not being provided for. Those are the folks that should be looked at in our budget. So these folks that are in need on our list for 7 years on our puns list and developmentally disabled on our list, and they're just disregarded. 7 years on a list. Yeah.
The state developmental system, yeah, it is not able to meet the needs of where it is now. What about the childless adults, though? Would you favor that population if they're not disabled, for example, just low income?
Say that one more time.
The childless adults, the population that we were that I was asking about is, you know, the Republicans are looking at this is the Affordable Care Act expansion, expanded Medicaid. Some I've seen numbers anywhere from 700,000 to 900,000 people in Illinois who get coverage through that. The feds have provided a lot of money for that, as you know, and they're talking about rolling it back. Should Illinois stop, you know, doing essentially the Affordable Care Act expansion through Medicaid?
Well, I think one of the things that we should do here, and we have actually a working group, is still one of the actual functional working groups between bipartisan, bicameral in here under the dome that works. And I trust that group to leverage our dollars with federal dollars to best serve our most vulnerable. I trust them to figure that piece out. The Medicaid budget is extremely difficult to understand. And even in this budget, our staff who does have the information from this budget really even just said in our caucus, which is embargoed for information, was like, I really can't wrap my arms around what's going on in the Medicaid budget proposal that we have just seen that's going to be announced here. It's going to take us a minute. So ask me that question in a little bit, what's going on there and what we can support and what we can't. But it's going to be a lot of negotiations with that Medicaid working group this year.
Education is another area that is, you know, you mentioned, but the budget is a moral document, right? Education, a lot of people view how we educate our children, what we mandate they learn about, maybe things we leave off the curriculum as a moral position. We've certainly seen the Trump administration try to exert its will in terms of DEI, Black history, things like that in the federal government. If that were to start to trickle down through the Department of Education funding to local schools, where they were to say, you know, change your curriculum or you're going to lose funding for whatever program. Do you think that's a good approach to policy?
Well, I think we have state rights, and I think the national, you know, I didn't support the national view for sex ed. I don't think the federal government should be telling the states how to educate their kids. You know, we're Republicans. We believe in less government. We believe in local control. So I think our local school boards should be determining that. I think even the state is somewhat of an overreach when it comes to on those things. But I do believe if the administration decides to get rid of the Department of Education, that we have already had some conversations with Democrat colleagues that we would want those dollars that come into the state of Illinois to continue to go to Title IX. That does not go into the evidence-based funding model to go to, let's say, Chicago schools compared to around the state of Illinois. We want them to continue to go to our most vulnerable kids.
Do you think Black history should be part of the curriculum? Is one example of, among many. I mean, it seems like that's something that, you know, we're seeing that scrub from government websites, for example, but is it appropriate in schools?
I wouldn't see why not. And I've never heard that that's been scrubbed, but I guess that's news to me.
Let's also talk about, sticking with state finances, this tension in recent years, especially as the COVID funding has been wound down. There's this pressure to be more austere. Certainly your Republicans are some of the people saying that. And yet you also have the desire among some lawmakers to spend money on new programs. How do you evaluate those competing demands on the state's money?
Well, and that's a lot of the folks that are here under the dome right now talk about they've never had a budget without the COVID dollars. And that's one of the things we've talked about was not to spend those COVID dollars on new programs that weren't going to be sustainable. And the governor, if you asked him, would say that they haven't done that. We might argue a little bit differently. It's really important that you don't do that because in the end, we end up paying for that with increased taxes. I'm really nervous that this budget is going to be setting up Illinois families for a tax increase. And time will tell in a very short period of time. I'm very nervous what that will do. If there is an increase in the overall general revenue spend, there's only one way to do that, and is if the majority party, you know, raises our taxes.
Income taxes in particular, you think?
I don't know if it'll be there. You know, we've been hearing rumors back and forth, whether it's a service tax or whether it's a sales tax, but it'll be somewhere.
Just about 4.5 minutes left in our time together. I do want to ask about Speaker Madigan. Was convicted of federal corruption charges last week. What was your reaction to the outcome of that case?
Well, I think it was long overdue. Certainly, 10 counts. I hope that it's actually time that the Democrats in the House and in the Senate actually pass real ethics reform. This is another wake-up call. Certainly not the first, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, that has shown bad behavior. We can't legislate good behavior. We know that. But we certainly can change some of our whether it's revolving door or different things. We've got quite a few pieces of legislation. We have Democrats and Republicans that agree with it. Let's put together a good package. And if nothing else, let's raise some penalty enhancements and make that hurt.
I mean, you say we can't legislate good behavior, but from thou shalt not kill to the speed limit on Capitol Avenue here, there seems to be plenty of attempts to legislate good behavior. What are some specifics you would like to see? You know, a ban on outside employment, for example. There's a lot of lawyers and real estate agents and everything else here under the dome. I mean, is that, what are we talking about?
Well, like one of them, just the revolving door, you know, extending that. I mean, to think that you can be a legislator, you can be a legislator and you can be a lobbyist, at the same time, that's a little nutty. Local lobbyist, right? I mean, that's, how is that possible? And I didn't even know that was real until I found out it was real because it was happening. Those are certainly a few things. The reforms that the Democrats say they did, it made the Inspector General actually quit her job because she said, I can't even do my job within the rules you just gave me. So, there's some things that we can certainly do, and we've got a whole package of them that we could sit down and probably do a whole show on.
Maybe another day then. All right. This is not an easy time to be a political leader in America in general. We've seen particular challenges in uniting the factions that make up the Republican Party, especially here in Illinois. Part of your Republican caucus, a group that calls itself the Freedom Caucus, held a protest separate inauguration. I wonder, did you take that personally?
No, you can't. You know, and that's family business. The Freedom Caucus and I, we're part of a big family, and we are certainly united against Democrats, and we work really hard to message together on what's important, and that is to support Republicans and conservatives around the state.
What are you doing to keep your caucus together when there are those people who have pretty diametrically opposed views either to policy or maybe even just approach and messaging?
Yeah, it's really not so much within our caucus. It's the folks that are disruptive outside of the caucus that want to be a part of this process here, but can't win their own races, so just want to be part of the disruption.
Last question: Democrats in the Illinois House hold 78 seats to the Republicans 40. They can run the state without Republican input if they choose. How do you make sure you and your party remain relevant to lawmaking in Illinois?
Well, they almost couldn't pass a budget with 78 last year. You know, like I just said, it took them 3 times and had to break their own rules. But we're also the only caucus that represent parts of all 102 counties. And as you remember, you know, the Illinois House Republicans and myself, we're suing for this map on the state side. And it wasn't dismissed, and that's a good sign. And there's already a precedent for the compactness. And this is we have to fight this. We have 3 more elections under this map, and we have to fight for a better map next cycle, and that starts right now. Thank you.
Tony McCombie is the House Minority Leader, a Republican from Savannah in Northwest Illinois. We are 20 minutes away from Governor Pritzker's State of the State and budget address. We are going to take a break here on the 21st show. When we come back, we'll be talking with David Merriman and Paula Worthington, two experts on Illinois state finances. We are not taking calls today because of the technical setup and being here in the State House, but You can always email us. Talk at 21stshow.org is the address. Talk at 21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, hosting today from the Illinois State Capitol Building. In around 15 minutes or so, Governor Pritzker will be delivering this year's State of the State address and his budget message. Joining us now and throughout the rest of our broadcast today are two experts on Illinois government finances. David Merriman is the James J. Stuckel Presidential Professor in the College of Urban Planning and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's also co-lead of the Fiscal and Economic Policy Working Group at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, which is a think tank spanning all three campuses of the University of Illinois. David Merriman, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Also with us, Paula Worthington is a senior lecturer at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago. She's also academic director of Harris Policy Labs within the school. Paula Worthington, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
So I wonder if, Paula, I'll begin with you. Anything you want to react to what you might have heard from Speaker Welch there or Tony McCombie or just the overall budget situation this year, which you know was projected to have this $3 billion deficit. Now there's reporting that the governor's going to say, oh, no, it's not so bad. Take it where you will.
Sure. Well, it's certainly great to start some observations from a positive space, revenues coming in a little bit better than expected, spending pressures not demonstrably worse. So that's a good space. I would say the pieces that I heard from your previous guest that I want to elevate and really keep in mind as we hear the governor's address soon relate to federal policy changes that may or are already on the way here that could affect our circumstances here in Illinois. For example, the Medicaid program, I'd like to really sort of focus on that. That's a huge one in our state as well as in other states. We get a lot of federal support to provide the services that are provided here. And if ultimately, you know, we decide to the federal government decides to reduce its support to cover the Affordable Care Act expansion, childless adults, that has the potential to remove hundreds of thousands of people from the rolls in the state of Illinois. Alternatively, if we wanted to keep them on under the reduced federal reimbursement schedule, that could cost several billion dollars a year. And that seems to be a no-go. So I think that's going to be something I'm really going to be listening for.
David Merriman, maybe you can pick it up from there and just remind us of the scope of the Medicaid program, healthcare for the poor and disabled and some elderly as well here in Illinois.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. And I agree with the comments Paula made. Yeah. We spend about a little over $30 billion. That is in 2024, fiscal 2024. On Medicaid, we get about $20 billion from the federal government, and about $10 or $11 billion of our own is spent on Medicaid. So it's by far the biggest program in the state. It's about a third of the total spending of the state. And yeah, the changes, as Paula said, and as your other guest said, the changes are basically too large for the state to compensate if there were a major pullback from the federal government in terms of funding. There would certainly have to be some people that were not on the program.
So I guess my big picture question is, how do you assess the overall view of state finances, the economic situation broadly that we're in? I know we talked about the uncertainty coming out of Washington. That's a big piece. Maybe we can put a pin in that. But other than that, I mean, there was, again, a few months ago, a $3 billion budget deficit projected. Apparently, that's going to be better now. But David, where do you see the sort of overall economic picture that we're heading into?
Yeah, so honestly, when the $3 billion budget deficit number came out, it was a little bit of a head scratcher for me because, you know, revenues are sort of growing at more or less a normal pace. The economy, Illinois economy, is not in particularly bad shape. The unemployment rate is higher than the national average, but still relatively low. So, you know, I didn't think that we had particular revenue problems. On the spending side, the question is really how much the ARPA money got into continuing programs. And of course, Speaker Welch said that it hadn't been used for continuing programs, but you never really know until you have to wind those programs down.
That's so the COVID relief money you're referring to.
What's that?
Just for listeners, like you said, ARPA. That's COVID. COVID relief money from the federal government.
Yes. Thank you. Sorry. Right. And so I didn't think that Illinois was in particular fiscal problems prior to President Trump coming in and potentially changing federal policy. Now I think that is, as other speakers have said, you know, the big risk.
Paula, what do you think about that? The sort of broad economic situation we're facing. Maybe that $3 billion was overstated, but Illinois does still have some secular problems, even relative to its neighbors here in the Midwest.
Well, sure. I basically agree with Dave's characterization, though, that we had no big reason to think that a $3 billion deficit was really something we were going to be looking at this point, because, you know, revenues have grown pretty well and the spending pressures have not been outsized. But that said, as Dave mentioned, our economic performance as a state has lagged that of our neighbors and the nation as a whole. That is not new news, but it has a little bit of a COVID, post-COVID overlay. And so when you think about going forward, you know, what are the options for this state, given it has a relatively high tax burden, a relatively regressive tax system in place, it wants to grow its capabilities and be an attractive place for businesses and residents to work, to live, to relocate. But to some extent, it's an uphill climb for us. And some of that is due to our fiscal legacies, long-term debt, unfunded pension liabilities, things of that sort. But those are not new things. And I think what I'm going to be listening for today in the budget address is, you know, how much is the attention going to be on, quote unquote, solving the immediate issue of what's our budget going to look like for the next fiscal year, but also thinking about where we might go as a state longer term.
David, Paula mentioned there the idea that Illinois has a relatively regressive tax system. Can you remind people what that means and how Illinois compares to other states in the way it raises money from its taxpayers and citizens?
Yeah, well, the three big taxes in Illinois are the income tax, which is a flat rate tax, the sales tax, which taxes consumption and particularly goods consumption, and that comes more from, is a larger share of the income of low income people than higher income people, and then the property tax. And the property tax is very more controversial effects across the income distribution, but it's generally thought to be somewhat regressive as well. And that is, it relies more on payments from low-income people than upper-income people. So there's really nothing in the Illinois tax system that makes it progressive. It's not that different than some of our Midwest neighbors, but and other states around the country. But compared to other sort of high-income states, if we look like at New York, New Jersey, California, those kind of states, we generally do see more progressive state tax systems.
You know, and yet there is not, there is and there isn't an appetite to change these things, right? People have floated the ideas over the years. There was a statewide vote on a constitutional amendment that would allow us to have a progressive income tax, right? Where people who make more money would pay a higher rate, people who make less money would pay a lower rate. There have been people who've discussed taxing services as well as goods, so not just when you buy food or a new iPhone, but also when you get a haircut or pay someone to mow your lawn or something like that. And then obviously property taxes are a recurring concern. Paul, I wonder if you have any sense that there is any real appetite to tackle those sort of deeper structural questions, or, you know, or are people just content to kind of skate along from year to year making changes at the margins?
Well, honestly, I feel better positioned to comment on the substance and less about whether the political forces are going to lead us to actually act. I like to think this is a moment where we might act, in part because we have some within the state challenges that we need to sort of address. And they're not at the state level, they're at the local government level. We have transit systems under stress. We have our educational partners through school districts and so on under stress. And so I think there is going to be some appetite, political appetite, really, for pressing the reset button. But that said, I want to highlight a couple of things or respond a little bit to what Dave mentioned on the regressivity of the tax structure. I think everything he said, I agree with. I think that the changes that you, potential changes, Brian, that you mentioned, moving to a progressive or graduated income tax on the one hand, or considering the sales tax base on the other. What I would encourage us all to keep in mind is that sometimes there are ways to think about making a base broader and more aligned with the overall growth of the economy. And that gives you then some room to consider either bringing rates down or at least relieve pressure to raise tax rates themselves. And, you know, last thing I think I want to emphasize is that while Illinois does look kind of regressive when looking at the tax structure, when you actually add in the spending, the targeted kinds of spending on income assistance, refundable tax credits, and the kinds of other support programs the state does, we don't look as regressive because the state has made choices about how to support individuals and families with limited resources.
David Merriman, just a couple of minutes until we need to end our broadcast, and then we'll take a short break, and some of our stations will be coming back for the governor's speech at noon. But what are you hoping to hear from the governor today?
Well, I'm hoping that he will address the potential problems related to changes in Washington policy and sort of help us understand what his philosophy will be with that respect. And in particular, think about how we would respond to changes in drastic changes in Medicaid.
Paula Worthington, same question to you, about a minute left.
Well, I'd love to hear a little bit of space for tackling the state's long-term liabilities, the pension liabilities in particular. There's a lot of chatter about tier two pensions and funding them properly, maybe making adjustments. I'm looking to see if that issue is addressed in his remarks.
All right. Well, that'll be an interesting one to talk about perhaps after the speech, maybe even before it, depending on how long the governor takes to make his way through the House chamber to the rostrum. We are going to conclude the 21st show today. Let me mention, you can get a podcast of our program by visiting 21stshow.org. You can also find us on Apple or Spotify or NPR One, all the places you get your podcasts. We're also now on YouTube. You can find us there by searching for Illinois Public Media. Let us know what you think about our program. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. And you can find our email address, our voicemail line, every other way to contact us at our website, 21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. We are broadcasting live from the Illinois State Capitol Building. For the stations that are staying with us for the Governor's State of the State and Budget Address, we are going to take a minute and a half break, and we will come back with live coverage of that at noon. For the rest of you, The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.